have a bunch of authors on here. The second and third people are my graduate students, and they have posters here on giving more detail on this research and some other research on Amita Culprit, and the last one's a postdoc in our lab. So this is kind of a summary of about 4 years of work looking at what I'd like to say the good and the bad aspects of Amita Culprit use in landscapes. So we're going to talk about its efficacy and duration in poplar. I mean, part of a good IPM program is always to figure out how long your insecticide will last so you don't have to spray it repeatedly and reduce insecticide use, increase worker safety. So we have two systems where we looked at efficacy and duration with three different insects in poplars and in roses. And then I want to talk to you about the non-target effects and some residue analysis that confirms the amount of Amita Culprit that there is in nectar. So I work on landscapes, I work with greenhouse, and Amita Culprit for us has replaced all organophosphate products. It's replaced some pyrethroids and organophosphates and over-the-counter products for homeowners. So for us, it's ubiquitous, and it's injected in trees. It's the main chemical used for recommended for emerald ash borer. So it really is important that we understand its efficacy and duration and its non-target effects. Amita Culprit for us is not very good for clear-wing borers, a persistent problem in landscape, but it is very good for the buprestid borers that tunnel right under the bark, so emerald ash borer, two-line chestnut borer, which in my state follows oak wilt or can get there a little bit before oak wilt, flat-headed apple tree borer, persistent problem in nurseries. So it's a good insecticide for some things. So a lot of this stuff is already published, some isn't. So I'm going to start to talk to you about what's in orange, the efficacy and duration of Amita Culprit in poplars, both in the field and containers. So I noticed a lot of people have been going to Google and getting maps of their research site. It's kind of amazing that from outer space you can see the field you walk around in. But this is my field, and this is some of the plants that we've gotten data from on the efficacy and duration of Amita Culprit. So we have a bunch of different studies. I don't have time to talk to you about them all today. Just one study that's called that's in these says experiment field poplars. So cottonwood leaf beetle is a very important defoliator of cottonwoods and poplars. So it's a native defoliator. It's maintained in the population because we plant hedgerows of cottonwoods to reduce wind in the Midwest. And then it moves over to the different poplars that are used for biomass or for soil remediation to suck chemicals out of the soil, and then they burn the poplars. So it's the most important defoliator, especially in the first 3 years of growth of the plant. Later on, as the plants get thicker leaves, the beetles don't do as well. So here's something about the life history. Nice big juicy eggs for coccinellids are laid on the leaves. The larvae do have those white glands that you see that protect them from a lot of invertebrate predators, and the adults, the pupation is right on the plant or below the plant on the weeds. So one of the first things we want to see if you use systemic Amita Culprit, does it conserve these coccinellas that are the main predators? And so we use soil applications, and here's data from Hippodamion harmonia. So when they walk on the leaves, they don't have any mortality. And again, when the insect feeds on the plant with Amita Culprit, it takes one bite and it stops. And we have not tested the indirect effects on those larvae, but those larvae just do sit there and then they tremble and slowly die, which is going to be a persistent, something persistently we're going to talk about when we talk about non-targets. So here's our first field study, and what I've done is to make this go quicker, I've just highlighted in yellow everything that's significant. And so we're testing. So this is just to tell you, for the higher amounts of either the granular formulation, look, we're using only 0.5x. So the x would be label rate. We're using half a label rate, quarter, 1/8 label rate. So we're using the granular drench, and Bayer has a new compressed tablet. And so the yellow shows you that if you use it in July, it's still in the plant that next July. And some of our studies that I don't report here have found it even effective for longer than that. So it's something you're using in landscape or tree nurseries, if you can get out of one application 2 summers of effectiveness, that's pretty good, I would say. So you'll hear more about these tablets. They probably will be coming on the market, and obviously they help worker safety. You just put a tablet by the base of the sapling, and plant sucks it up. So it's a good product. If we look at poplars and containers, again, it's all yellow. So every different dose, all the different formulations, whether it's a granular drench or a tablet, or whether we put the poplar saplings, we soak them. That is now on one of the Admire Pro label. It's effective against larvae. So I would say in plants where that you don't make flowers, that this is a really, like poplars, they are the cultivars that they use for biomass are purposefully bred not to flower before they're cut down. So it's a really good product. You apply it once, and in these poplars, the first 3 years are when you have the most problems. Like I said, as the trees get older, leaves get thicker, the leaf beetle is not really an economic problem. They do slight defoliation, but it's no longer an economic problem. Okay, so what about roses? So what's the efficacy and duration in roses? So against Japanese beetle, and I want you to know this, this is a tea rose. So tea roses, a lot of the modern ones are even pointed, but they don't have their pollen or their nectar exposed, so a lot of beneficials don't use them. In my state, Minnesota, we have a lot of shrub roses or a lot of Rosa rugosa cultivars that have open flat flowers, and those are highly visited by beneficials. But for tea roses that don't produce a lot of pollen and nectar, imidacloprid, again, may be a good choice. If you see here at the top there, the 2006 data is in aqua and the 2007 is in the blue, and again, the yellow across everything means it's still statistically different from the control. So if I put imidacloprid in a rose container one summer, it's effective the next summer. That's against Japanese beetle. That's pretty good. Japanese beetle is very difficult to manage. This middle column, mean flip time. What happens when insects take a bite of an imidacloprid plant is they don't die right away. They twitch. And they lay on their, depending on the species, they lay on their backs, their sides, upright. They just twitch. And usually they never take another bite. They will slowly die from that. And so since the mortality data doesn't look good to those of you who do spray and count work, I just want to show you by flip time that they're biologically dead. Even though they're still there and they didn't die, they are biologically dead. They eventually die. And then the last one is to talk about the amount of defoliation, because in an ornamental like roses, people don't want a lot of defoliation. And so the data is pretty good that since they take a bite and die, they don't defoliate much. So again, I have to say in roses, and tea roses, where you don't have a lot of that pollen and nectar displayed, that this is a very good product. You apply it once, you get a whole year of control. I think that is a very good management product. I'm not spraying it in the environment. Obviously, we have issues in urban landscapes where people don't want to see anybody spray. They want to have pristine landscapes, but they don't want anybody spraying because of drift. Okay, so remember my first slide said the good and the bad, so I'm getting to some of these non-target effects, which might make us not use imidacloprid in certain situations. And again, this data is published. So I've used three species of ladybird beetles in different publications, CMAC, Harmonia hepidemia, the green lacewing, and an inserted parasitoid, Anagyrus pseudococci. And, there's been a lot of controversy over this colony collapse disorder, CCD, on the different contributors, whether it's a virus or whether it's pathogens or whether it's pesticides in the foraging environment. And so in France, imidacloprid has been identified as maybe one of the contributors to this problem as a pesticide in the foraging environment. And, gaucho is a seed protectant. Oh, my goodness.
You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, a lot to say here. And so so I wanted you just to realize that you put it on a corn plant and you get all this biomass. I'm putting it on flowering plants. So you can see I might have much higher concentrations than found in these French studies. And so the data supports that. 2004 data on buckwheat control, 0 parts per billion, 1x, 16, 2x, 29 parts per billion. Above 20 parts per billion alters behavior. And then you see June 2007 on a different plant, on tropical milkweed. We have slightly higher, but almost similar. But if I do a second application, like most growers do, look how high it gets, 53 parts per billion in 1x, and 112 parts per billion there. So I've got to go through this quickly. I'm going to skip the first data we had was that when we caged ladybird beetles on a plant, we did find that it only affected the fecundity of one, but again, they laid on their backs, and 2 weeks they stayed there trembling, and at that time we didn't want to call it death. We were being very kind. But later on when we started looking at it, we tried to analyze. This is a little more complex, but basically I'm giving them a choice. I'm saying, okay, I have a tube with a control and a 1X or a control and a 2X, and I have to go through this quickly. The data is that they can't tell the difference. One bite, they're dead, or they're trembling, they're on their way. And by day 12 in these three species, you can see higher concentrations for Harmonia, but most of the concentrations for C-Mac and Hippodamia are affected. I'm going to go really quickly here to Anagyrus, and this is 24 hours, but you can see the dark orange is 2X, the lighter orange is 1X, the blue is control, and by 7 days, they're all dead for the inserted parasitoid. And for green lacewing, they all tremble before they die. And I'm from New York, so actually this is how I usually talk. And for when you look at 10 days, you can see dramatic difference. So in summary here, soil applied imidacloprid used in landscape plants that don't provide a lot of pollen and nectar, it's a great product. Apply it and it lasts for over a year. But where you have beneficials important in your IPM program or just in the landscape, it does create a problem. And outside my office, there's a big display garden, and I found out that every plant that they put out there has imidacloprid in it. And if the data is that it's lasting for a year, it doesn't matter if you applied it in April. It's going to have an effect on beneficials. Any questions?
We actually have time for actually one question. Go ahead.
I didn't look at indirect effects through any insect. I looked at direct effects by nectar feeding.
Yeah, you didn't move through prey.
Thank you.